Today on Season 3, Episode 86 of the Unknown Packers Podcast, the football season may be over, but the award season is in full swing. Join Bryce, Ken, and I as we pass out the most prestigious verbal awards this side of the internet, the second annual UPEs. The MVP may not come as a surprise, but several other categories might. We have expanded a bit this year and can't wait to share with you our top choices. Who is this year's biggest surprise? Who is the biggest disappointment? Listen in and find out. And now it's time for the UPEs on tap.
Thank you so much for following the Unknown Packers podcast.
Touchdown! Dagger! Al Harris, 56 yards to a game-winning touchdown! Green Bay Packers! Go, Pat, go!
Running isn't everything, but it's the only thing. Green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow,
green and yellow, green and yellow. Unknown Packers podcast. Green
and
yellow, green and yellow, green
and yellow, green and yellow. And let me tell you this, Green Bay is a great town.
And welcome to the Unknown Packers Podcast for the UPs on tap, the moment you have all been waiting for, our season-ending awards. And it's myself, Big Bad Ken Ingles, and the soothing, sexy sounds of our co-founder and producer, Neebles. And we are going to get right into it for the first half. We will have MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Comeback, and Rising. And in the second half, we will have Surprise, Disappointment, Breakout, Favorite Play, Game, and Memory. And we want this episode to be sort of self-contained, where you can look back on this throughout the year, maybe in years moving forward, where we look back on this as one of the greatest episodes of the Unknown Packers podcast. This is the second UPEs. Neebles and I did the UPEs last year for our kickoff and thrilled to continue the tradition. And let's kick it off with most valuable player. We will have some overlap. We didn't want to do a consensus. We wanted everyone to have their own point of view and for the listeners to get a snapshot into the three of our sort of thinking in terms of the UPs. But kicking it off, we have the MVP, and there's no surprise. You had the fans that voted for 87% of the vote for Aaron Rodgers, who ended up winning his third MVP. That's my selection for MVP. I will be shocked if any of you have another one.
Same here. Rodgers all the way, no question about it.
Right. If Aaron Rodgers is good enough to win the MVP of the league, that's good enough for me. 48 TDs, 5 interceptions, plus another 4 running in. He had one hell of a year, and there's not much more we can say that hasn't already been said this year as we've been throwing the praise at Aaron Rodgers all season, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to give him the MVP from our point of view. I don't think that there was any surprise with that. I mean, completing 70.7% for a yard under 4,300 yards, the touchdown interception totals that you had mentioned, Ken, 121.5 passer rating, a rejuvenated Rodgers. It was really great to see. And it got interesting, though, in our offensive player of the year. And I'm wondering if you had any struggles in terms of picking offensive player of the year. Our fans had 54% for Davante Adams, 38% for Aaron Rodgers, and 8% for Big E, Smoothie, Elgton Jenkins. I'm curious, who did you select for your offensive player of the year?
I also had Adams. I just thought, you know, I was kind of between Adams and I was actually thinking Aaron Jones for a bit, but Adams just had a spectacular year. I mean, all the records that were broken, all the individual accolades that he had, he just played lights out, and even missing the games that he did. I mean, he came back and this is a season that we just haven't seen from him before, and definitely well deserving of the Offensive Player of the Year award.
Right. If I'm looking at this too, it's really hard to shy away from Devontae for me. Again, this is a guy who's a first team all pro wide receiver in the entire NFL. Just insane production. What, 18 touchdowns, just under 1,400 yards in only 13 and a half games, which is the crazy stat. And I went back and I was kind of looking at his game logs. he didn't score a touchdown in only three games this season, and that includes the two playoff games. And of those three games that he played in that he didn't score, that was one that he got injured in like the second quarter. Just insane. Just insane production. It almost became laughable. You know, we talked about this during the season with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae. You almost just expected Aaron Rodgers to throw three touchdowns, and you just kind of expected Devontae to get 100 yards and at least one score. It was crazy.
That's the impressive thing, is that defenses knew that the Packers were going to feed Devontae Adams, and he still carved him up. I think the other really impressive thing about Devontae Adams, he's not the biggest guy, and he's not the fastest guy. But man, is he a technician, and the separation that he creates, it's really cool to see his ascension. He gets better year in and year out. The 115 receptions, which surpassed the franchise record that was set by Sterling Sharp back in 1993. That was a team record of 112. And then he also tied Sterling Sharp's mark of 18 touchdowns in one season. Like you mentioned, missed 2.5 games, essentially. One interesting stat, he caught more touchdown passes than Mason Crosby made field goals.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But
that's
insane. no surprise with Offensive Player of the Year. I did think about Rodgers, but you take Adams away from the equation, and I mean, what is there to say about what this team would be? I still think that Aaron Rodgers would be Aaron Rodgers, but having that sort of weapon, that go-to, and then having defenses know about that we were going to feed Devontae Adams, and the games that we struggled in were games that we didn't sort of get to him early, look at him, where defenses were able to neutralize him a little bit. But that was the more impressive thing, is that he was shadowed, he was double-teamed, triple-teamed, and he's still week in, week out, just gaudy numbers and a juicy stat line. And moving on to our defensive player of the year, again, I don't think that there's any sort of disagreement with the fans. 92% with Ja Money, Jaire Alexander, the third year breakout. We all knew that he was capable of getting to the level that he performed, but it's pretty crazy to think that being 23 years old, will be 24, what he did, allowing fewer than 30 yards in pass coverage in 13 games, which was the most this season. Second team All-Pro. He was the highest graded player at his position, according to Pro Football Focus. Allowed 4.9 yards per attempt and a passer rating of 68.3 into coverage during the regular season. In the postseason, he gave up as many catches as he had interceptions. Two. That's crazy. Two receptions he gave up in the postseason. What's pretty impressive with Jaire Alexander, even though he only had one interception in the regular season, the reason is that quarterbacks and offenses, they just shied away from Jaire Alexander. That was a true definition of a shutdown corner in his third year. Brian Gutekunst hit an absolute home run with his first overall selection when he became general manager in his first year. But Jaire Alexander, defensive player of the year, hands down.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree more. I kind of thought a little bit maybe about Kenny Clark, had his name in there for a while. But just looking at what Jaire did, like you said, I mean, the stats weren't huge. I mean, he had the one interception. But it's just, like you said, quarterbacks were just staying away from him. They weren't going at him. And if you're not being thrown to, I mean, that's just the utmost sign of respect. So Jaire, I mean, it's just outstanding what he did this year. I'm looking forward to see what he does going into the future. I mean, I think if he keeps up this level of play, I mean, we're going to have that Jaire Island to talk about for years to come.
That's a scary thing, too.
Oh, like, yeah.
Scratching the surface.
For sure, for sure. I think the thing I'll remember most about this season is kind of those end of season gaudy like memes we saw of, like, you know, Jaire versus the number one wide receivers in the NFL. And it was right. Like zero catches or one catch, 20 yards, you know, or just like 20 total yards for these number one wide receivers across the NFL. And it's all 16 weeks of just insanely impressive performance against the league's best. I think if you're starting a team today, it'd be really hard to come up with another young name that you would want to start at the cornerback position besides Jaire Alexander. And I think that's, for me, the main reason why he gets that award. You know, there's a few other names I was maybe tinkering with, but this guy's just been dominant. And another thing is just that running screen plays on his side of the field has almost become laughable at this point. The guy sniffs those out so well, knifes through these blockers and defenders, and just, you know, makes these embarrassing tackles for loss anytime it seemed like they were going to try and do a running back screen or a quick wide receiver screen to his side of the field.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. That is spot on. It's crazy to think, too. I mean, this guy, he's not a big guy. And it's just crazy, just the bravado, the confidence, the strength that he exudes on the football field. I'm glad what Niebels mentioned as well is that he's only going to, I mean, it's just crazy to think that he just completed his third year, only 23 years old. And you mentioned building a team around. I wouldn't even consider just a cornerback. You know, if you're talking about who do you build your team around outside of a quarterback, you got to look at what Jair Alexander does. I mean, he completely neutralizes half of the football field, like you said, with screen passes too. He's an all-in-one type of corner. It's super excited to see what we have. And moving on to our next UP's award. It feels so good to be talking about. I know that we wanted to be talking about a Super Bowl championship Green Bay Packers team. This was a special season. It was really cool to research a little bit and sort of look back on what a special season this was. I know in terms of rookies, it's a polarizing topic, but in terms of rookie of the year, Ken, who is your rookie of the year?
So I looked at this a few different ways, and for me, this was a really interesting story, if anything else. I'm giving mine to Chris Barnes, who was not drafted, undrafted guy this year. No one was talking about him in camp. He was cut during the final roster cutdowns. They snuck him back on the practice squad. Kamal Martin starts the season on injured reserve after spending a day on the active roster. And this guy seems to come out of nowhere and is your week one starter next to Christian Kirksey. And from then on out, you know, was really a solid performer. I believe Pro Football Focus had him as a player of the week or player of the month at one point for rookies. And I know he had a little bit of ups and downs. He had some COVID spat in the middle of the season, but this is a guy that I think has a lot of potential upside in this defense. You know, this draft, if you look back at it in terms of rookies, we had some injuries. We had some players who were kind of drafted more for the future than, you know, maybe an immediate impact or sitting behind a little bit on the depth chart. But kind of interesting that landed on a guy who wasn't even drafted to be looking at this team's rookie of the year, at least from the way I'm looking at this team.
And that's actually funny. Believe it or not, I have the same for my rookie of the year.
That a boy.
Yeah. He's just one of those guys just kind of looking through. And I think of all the rookies, I mean, he's the one that probably made the biggest contribution. I mean, he played, 12 regular season games, which I think is more than the other rookie, the rest of the rookie class and all playoff games. And he actually did make a contribution. I was trying to find a way to give it to AJ Dillon, but I just couldn't do it. Obviously, you know, with his lack of playing time. But yeah, I think Barnes, I mean, he stood out to me. I mean, it didn't feel like he was a rookie. You know, he played lights out. He's got those natural instincts, and he's another one of those guys, part of a young defensive core that's going to be good for years to come. And I can't wait to see what he does next year and beyond.
Right. Another thing that jumps off with Chris Barnes, I know he had that hand injury late in the season and was playing with the club. And there seemed to be a few times, few opportunities where he had an opportunity to maybe snag down an interception if he had maybe two good hands instead of, you know, playing with that boxing glove on one side. And it looks like he just was always in the right position, right? And that's, I guess, what you're looking for. Linebacker is not an easy position to play in the NFL, especially when you're wearing that communication helmet, right, with the green dot. And I'm hoping that, you know, this is a guy who we're looking as a player on the rise, especially in a potentially new defense and going to be having to figure out new calls and figure out a new way of doing business next year.
I'm surprised. This is the first moment where I'm straying. I am going to be peacocking it for this category, but I thought about Chris Barnes, but I decided to go with AJ Dillon for Rookie of the Year. I know that he only carried 46 times for 242 yards and two touchdowns. He also had two passes for 21 yards over 11 games. But what he did in week 16, not only did it cement the fact that I thought that we were going to go the distance, I mean, taking on a team that a lot of people thought could be representing the AFC in the AFC Championship, even beyond. That didn't work out in the Tennessee Titans' favor. But what you got to see in A.J. Dillon in Week 16, for me, solidifies him getting the Rookie of the Year from my perspective. 124 yards and two scores. He needs a little bit of work on the Lambeau leap, but I've got a feeling that he will only get better in that regard. The future's bright. This was a unpopular second-round draft pick. Even after you see the highlight reel of what he did to defenders, his sort of finesse and in that type of body, it's really exciting to see what we have in A.J. Dillon. For me, that Week 16 performance is just something that I felt like we had to recognize. He averaged 5.3 yards per carry. What's even more impressive is that he battled COVID for 2 months and then came out and performed Week 16. So it would have been really interesting to see, had he not had that bout with COVID, what would have happened over the entire season. But I think the future is bright for both Chris Barnes and A.J. Dillon. But that's where I strayed on one of those categories. I'm sure we're going to start to get a little bit more crazy as we move on in terms of our UPs. But moving on to our next category, we have comeback. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. Comeback player. And I'm going to throw it out there. I've got a feeling that we're going to all be fractured here. My comeback player is Aaron Rodgers. When you look at 2019 and you compare it to what he did in 2020, 2019, a lot of fans started rearing their ugly head at Aaron Rodgers, saying that he held onto the football too long, was indecisive. Granted, this is the first year in a new offensive system with a first-year rookie head coach. And what he did the following year in 2020, taking home his third MVP, taking home the coveted MVP Yuppie. And so for me, I thought about a couple other players for comeback, but I thought this was a renaissance for Aaron Rodgers, especially when you have a Green Bay Packers team that traded up and drafted what seems to be the future successor for Aaron Rodgers. You had this whole cloud of doubt in training camp. Will LaFleur and Rodgers get along? Last year, will Rodgers and Love get along? And then what you see is Aaron Rodgers put on quite arguably his greatest season in green and gold. I'm thrilled to give the comeback player of the year for Aaron Rodgers. But in perspective, in 2019, he still threw for 4,000 yards, but he had 26 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, a 95.4 QBR rating. In 2020, he had just a yard short of 4,300 yards, 48 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He scampered for 3 and 124 yards rushing, and had 121.5 QBR rating and ran away with the MVP race in the NFL. So that is my comeback player of the year, Mr. Aaron Rodgers.
I like it. Good one. Good one. I went a little bit different route, and actually I kind of feel weird even calling this a comeback player, but I went with Big Bob Tonyan as comeback player.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm all for UPs for Big Bob. Let's see how many he brings home.
And the reason being is not, you know, he was never at that, you know, that peak, you know, peak position to come back from. But the reason why I'm kind of giving him the award is, I know myself, I had him pretty much dead to rights. I had him cut going into this season. I didn't have him making the roster. Looking back in the stats, I mean, in 2018, he had 4 receptions for 77 yards, a little bit of an improvement in 2019, 10 receptions for 100 yards. But then in 2020, he blew up big time, as we all know. I mean, 52 receptions, 586 yards, and 11 touchdowns. I mean, that's from a guy who, again, in my opinion, went from dead to where he ended up. I mean, that's a huge comeback for me. You know, I'm a big fan of the tight end position. So to see, you know, to finally have a tight end on the team that's getting that sort of usage, that's allowing LaFleur to really open up the offense, you know, allowing the team to go in different routes, I think he's invaluable. I mean, he probably could have won some other awards here, but for me, he's my comeback player.
The future is bright for Big Bob Tonyan the UPs. This isn't his only award. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Oh, I'm sure.
Wow. Well, I will confirm something here for you gentlemen. This is going to be our first category of UP where we all have three different names. So while I respect both of your decisions, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's a guy obviously who, you know, had a comeback year, but as you know, from Aaron's mouth himself, you know, down years for Aaron or career years for other guys. And Big Bobby, you know, spoiler alert, you might hear his name on a different category on my list. So he's not.
Are you throwing shade at us right now before you announce your comeback?
Just a little
player?
Bit. Just explaining a little bit. But for me, this is, you know, I have a little bit of a different spin on this. I've got Billy Turner as my comeback player.
Oh, there you go.
This was a guy, 2019, who was signed as part of our mega free agent class, right? We had the two Smith brothers, we had Amos and Turner. And after the year, there's a lot of fans who were not a big fan of Billy Turner's quote-unquote average play at right guard in the 2019 season. A lot of people saying we need to get out from that contract. It was a mistake. It was terrible. And then this guy comes in, and he was a key versatile piece and a foundation piece for this offensive line. He started at left tackle, right guard, right tackle. Stepped up his game from every statistic that you can, you know, look across the board, from pass block win rate, run block win rate, leader in the locker room. And looking at next year, he's going to be a likely starting tackle. Mm-hmm. Bakhtiari's probably not going to be ready to go to start the season. And who knows what's going to happen the other side of the line with Rick Wagner if he comes back. You know, but I looked at this from the perspective of, talk about a guy that everyone was kind of writing off, similar to how Neebles is writing off Big Bob, who I was also guilty of that as well coming into the season.
I did not have him.
I know you will never forgive us for that. We are on your permanent list for Tanyan to be excluded from both mine and Neebles' 53-man roster prediction list. So I know
it's
that
like Steve Buscemi and Happy Gil or in Billy Madison.
Oh yeah, yeah, we are on your list.
List, baby.
But yeah, for a guy who, you know, was kind of battling the court of public opinion here to come and just kind of be that foundation rock on that line, gets my comeback player, Yupi.
I love it. And I like that we're getting a little bit of diversity in our selections. I was a little nervous, right? I mean, the first three categories I figured were no-brainers, and this is where it gets a little exciting. I'm excited for the second half, but as we wrap up the first half of the Yupis on tap, we will wrap up with Rising. And Ken, I'm curious, who is your Yupi Rising Award winner?
Okay. This is my second award for an offensive lineman. And I'm going with John Runyon.
Oh, interesting.
So he was kind of in the back of my mind for Rookie of the Year. I also had A.J. Dillon in there for Rookie of the Year, kind of in the back of my mind. But when I think about a rising player, this is a guy who played in 8 games this season, kind of in spot duty. I know the Packers drafted 3 interior offensive linemen, all kind of in succession in the later rounds. And the one that everyone was kind of most excited for was kind of John Runyon. Mm-hmm. And you know, in those 8 games that he played in spot duty, he played 50% of snaps, or you know, 3 times. So he looked good. But he's one of those guys that's just kind of behind several stars on this offensive line. This offensive line is stacked. But I think he's one of those type of guys that's going to have a big opportunity to contribute in a big way in 2021. You know, as I mentioned with the Billy Turner Award, Bakhtiari is going to be injured. Who knows if he'll be ready to go to start the season. Lindsley is looking like he might not be coming back, as well as maybe a Rick Wagner not coming back as well. There's going to be an opportunity to step up and rise and show what he can do in this league. And it might be in year 2 of his rookie experience or rookie contract.
I like it. I like it. Neebles.
Nice. Well, I went with another member of the defense. I went with Darnell Savage.
Ooh.
Yep. I think Savage, I mean, he was another one that he had a strong, you know, strong rookie campaign, looked real good. And then starting out this season, I was kind of down on him. Looks like he was kind of, I don't want to say lost, but he just didn't have the gusto that I thought he did. But then he came on strong middle of the season, you know, towards the end there, and you know, doubled his interception totals from last season, and just he seemed to be everywhere around the ball. I mean, he was ball hawk, and he was up there making tackles. He was making those plays, and again, he's going to be one of the reasons why I think that this secondary is going to be you know, one of the strong points of the defense for years to come. I mean, we got that again. He's part of the young core of the secondary. Coach Gray has done wonders, but I think this kid has nowhere to go but up. So that is why he is my rising player.
I like it. I like that.
And my rising player is none other than J.K. Scott. Moving on to, just kidding. I'm actually
my jaw was just like,
I was like, I didn't think people thought it was a little serious there. No, my rising, I'm actually taking a page out of Neeble's book. I think Darnell Macho Man, the Great White Shark Savage, the future is bright for him. It makes me giddy to think about Jair Alexander and Darnell Savage back there, as well as Adrian Amos. I think this defense, it's going to be something that's a little bit different than what we've been accustomed to. And I'm curious to see how everything transpires with the new defensive regime. But Darnell Savage, 4 interceptions. He also had a sack. I would love to see him more as that roamer, line of scrimmage, a sort of Charles Woodson, Leroy Butler type of safety. I think he's got that ability. And I was over the moon when we traded up and selected him in the 2019 draft, our second first rounder. But it did seem like there were moments where maybe he was playing a little too fast. The game wasn't coming to him. The game really slowed down for him in the second half of the season. And I think that when you're looking at a third year breakout, Darnell Savage is that guy, but I really like the John Runyon pick as well. And someone that I'm going to be keeping an eye on when it comes to training camp. But that is the first half of the Yuppies on tap. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back right after this. Go Pack Go.
This episode is brought to you by Sonic Transformation. Check us out at www.sonictransformation.com. Sonic Transformation, your sound refined.
And welcome back to the second half of the Yuppies, the second edition of the Yuppies on tap with myself, Big Bad Ken Ingles, and the soothing, sexy sounds of Neebles, our co-founder and producer and the magician behind the scenes in the quote-unquote virtual flesh as we speak. But we are kicking off the second half with Breakout Player of the Year, and this is where the sycamore rises. And throwing it out there for Mr. Big Bob Tonyan, not to be confused with Tonyan, who we all thought that was the pronunciation of the name, at least for me, and I was embarrassed to find out that was not correct. But what you got to see out of Big Bob Tonyan, finished the season with 52 catches for 586 yards and 11 touchdowns. Those 52 receptions came on just 59 targets. And his catch percentage was 88.1%. One interesting stat with Big Bob Tonyan, not only did he tie the franchise record for most touchdowns by a tight end in a single season, last one to do that was Paul Kaufman in 1983 when I was birthed into this world. Been a long time since that. But a total of 33 of his catches resulted in first downs. So I'm thrilled. I think I thought he was tight end one material. I cringed. I took mental notes when you both exiled him from the 53-man roster. We never forget, but it's exciting to see what all this potential for the Sycamore, his off-season workouts with George Kittle, that perked my ears up a little bit to see if that could possibly translate into the regular season. But I mean, he went toe-to-toe in terms of red zone touchdowns with Travis Kelce, who's arguably the best tight end in the NFL. But when you're looking at stat lines, 52 catches, 586 yards, and 11 touchdowns, that's what you want out of a tight end. He is tight end material, and I am excited to see what the 26-year-old can do in seasons moving forward.
I'll jump in here really quick. This is hopefully where I make it up to you, Bryce, where I'm on the same page with you that Robert Tonyan is also my breakout player. The thing that jumps off the page... The thing that jumps off the page for me, and you already kind of commented on this, is 52 catches on 59 targets. That's insane, that catch percentage and that being that reliable target across the middle or down the field for Aaron Rodgers. Just lit up the stat sheet, you know, at year end with 11 touchdowns. He blanked kind of in that first game, but in the next three games, he had 5 touchdowns, including 3 in week 4. Then he kind of went on a little bit of a lull. And I remember after that 3-touchdown game, I was ready to crown him. And then I remember thinking, was that a little premature? But then guy goes off and he has 6 touchdowns over his last 7 games. And I think added another one in the postseason. And for me, I think we finally have that potential replacement for a JerMichael Finley type of player in this offense that we've been wanting for and chasing after, it seems like, for years, and failing and miserably and falling on our face trying to find these stopgap guys who only come in maybe for a year or just don't have success and we're throwing money around in the wrong places. Hopefully this is a guy that the Packers see as a priority to bring back, not only for this 2021 season, but for years to come.
Nicely done. Well, I'm not redeeming myself because I am straying away from you guys. And actually, mine is actually a little redemption story in itself. My breakout player happened to be my disappointment from the last UPs.
Oh,
and that is Rashawn Gary.
Oh,
with Gary, I mean, he is a guy who is he's kind of growing up before our very eyes. I mean, he's getting more playing time. And he's making the best of it. I mean, the guy has a motor on him. He is working hard, and you can tell. Very versatile defensive lineman. I mean, 5 sacks this season, more than doubling his production from last year. And he's taken those snaps from Preston Smith. And that's one thing that, everybody is saying that Preston Smith is a cut candidate for this season. Well, the emergence of Rashawn Gary is one of the reasons why. I mean, they can afford to. He's going to be playing more and more. He's going to be taking more and more snaps. And again, like I've said for everybody else, I mean, there's kind of a theme between most of my awards is there are these young guys going into their third year. It's just, he's just part of this young core of defenders. And I think next year he's going to be a monster. I mean, you see flashes of it this season. And again, kind of like Savage, he's got nowhere to go but up and he's still working hard. I love watching the kid play. And Like I said, he is going to be a beast next season.
What a different tune from a year ago.
Yeah.
I like it. Redemption song. I dig it.
Yeah, man. I can't argue against Rashawn Gary here. That's a really great inclusion as breakout player. And I think you said it too. I think he is poised for an ascension and a key contributor role on this team as a difference maker, with the likelihood of perhaps a Preston Smith not being on this team.
This just in, I have word that Rashawn Gary is getting as emotional by receiving this UPs as he did when he was selected with the 12th overall pick.
I can picture it. I can picture it now.
My sources are telling me that. So pretty crazy, Mr. Brian Gutekunst in his first 3 draft picks. And we haven't even mentioned that other one, Elgton Jenkins, too. So nice little sample size of what we've seen with Brian Gutekunst in his first round draft picks in 2018 and 2019, UPs specifically. But moving on, we have to get a little serious, not yet, but for our surprise award. Ken, I'm curious, who is your surprise for the UPs?
All right, boys. I realized this after, but apparently I have a fondness for our offensive line because this is the 3rd offensive lineman so far getting one of my UPs.
Oh,
and
wow. This
goes to the name that you just mentioned, Mr. Elgton Jenkins.
Oh, okay. Nice. All right. I dig it.
And the reason I give him surprise is, 2019 came in for an injured Lane Taylor who he did not win the job, but ended up playing really well and really solid at that position at left guard. But the reason why he was a surprise is we got to see how well he can play pretty much in all 5 positions on this line. Mm-hmm. And he can play at an extremely high level. We knew he was good, but he proved that he is a star and a shining rising star. This is a guy, he's a, second year player with Pro Bowl honors, which is insane because Pro Bowl typically has that moniker of being, you kind of get in a year or two late than maybe you should, than what you've earned it because of a little bit of a name recognition and popularity. But for him to kind of be, especially playing at an unknown, not very sexy position on the offensive line, to rise to that honor is a pretty big deal. And that's for me where he kind of, surprised and really showed that, like, he doesn't have a position. He's just, you could truly just put offensive line after his name when you read off the roster. And it's true. He can excel anywhere across that line.
I like that breakdown. I couldn't agree more with you on Big E. Again, what Gutekunst has done, the future is bright. We got a lot of young and ascending stars. Niebels, who's your surprise?
All right. Well, my surprise, and I'm not going to elaborate too much because Ken actually awarded him earlier, but I went with Billy Turner.
All right.
Yeah,
All right.
I mean, like you said, I mean, Billy Turner was one of those guys that everybody was pretty much, you know, pretty down on. They didn't think he was worth the contract. A lot of question marks, but he stepped in there, and like I said, he surprised me. I'm sure he surprised you guys, and he surprised a lot of people with how well he played. I mean, for being the quote-unquote weakest link of the offensive line, I mean, he played pretty damn good. And like you said, he was versatile, could move all over the place. And I think he earned and is earning every dime of his contract. And I hope they keep him on the, you know, on this line for the foreseeable future. So that, I mean, like I said, you covered it pretty well earlier, Ken. Billy Turner, yeah, he's definitely my surprise.
Niebels, you and I are cut from the same cloth on this UP's episode. I've got Billy Turner as my surprise as well.
Nice.
I mean, Ken mentioned it. You did as well. For a guy that was getting sort of tarred and feathered in terms of, he was too much on a four-year, what, $28 million deal, somewhere in that ballpark. That's a bargain now to think about. This guy came in at a perfect time, an unfortunate time when David Bakhtiari went down with an injury. But in 2019, he allowed 6 sacks and 45 pressures all at right guard. He played at right tackle, right guard, and left tackle. If you combine all three positions, he only allowed 2 sacks and 22 pressures in the 2020 season. Cut his allowed sacks and pressures by over half compared to his 2019 total. He played 363 snaps at left tackle, 244 at right guard, and 423 at right tackle. When you're talking about versatility of offensive linemen of Elgton Jenkins, you put Billy Turner in that in that category as well. Big surprise for me. I wasn't as down on him as others were, but I was not expecting. If you would have told me, hey, he's going to be starting left tackle and he's going to do a great job in the NFC Championship game, I don't know what my response would be, but I don't think I would have been on the same wavelength with that. So surprise for me, Billy Turner.
Yeah, I really like, you know, you solidified the surprise factor, I think, with that last little anecdote. Like, if you would have told me that he would have stepped in at left tackle based off of his 2019 performance, or at least how his 2019 performance was being talked about amongst Packer personalities and media folks, that would have shocked, you know, everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, that's a little worrisome. But the fact that he was able to kind of come in there and spot duty and hold up really well for Bakhtiari, yeah, I love it. I love that all of us had Billy Turner winning an award in some capacity, whether it be surprise or comeback so far.
Definitely. He's got to be pretty happy. Not as happy as Rashawn Gary is. I've heard he's inconsolable at the moment. So, in a good way. But unfortunately, last year, speaking of Rashawn Gary, he got disappointment. Niebels did not hold back on the rookie from last year. And I'm excited to know what Niebels has for disappointment this year.
All right. Well, this year I went with Jay Sternberger.
Oh.
And again, it's one of those situations where obviously he was, you know, he had the concussion that kept him out for a while. He was injured, but he, and again, he's only in his sophomore year here. But I think he was the highest drafted tight end we had picked for years. Big talk about him, big potential. And so far, again, injuries aside, he just hasn't really lived up to it. I don't think even when he was healthy, he hasn't contributed a whole lot. I mean, he had, 12 receptions, I think, and 114 yards this season in over 12 games. It's just one of those things that I feel like for the draft capital that was spent on him, he could be contributing more. But again, that's why I struggle with this category, because it's like sometimes this is way out of the player's control. But, you know, even when he was healthy towards the end of the year, I mean, he still didn't see a whole lot of playing time. Obviously, you know, the emergence of Big Bob, you know, kind of warranted that. But I just would like to see him step up. And I think, you know, next year could be one of those make or break type of years for him, especially with the stable of young tight ends that we have that could potentially, you know, send him to the curb in this offseason.
Crazy to think about. Wow.
Yeah. I guess I'll jump in here next. I'm going to be a little unique here, and I've got a co-award.
Oh, interesting, you rule breaker.
I am a little bit of a rule breaker. And one of those is also Jay Sternberger.
Wow.
And I will add in the winner in quotations of this award, Josh Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
So these are two guys. I really couldn't make a choice here. I thought they both were very similar, as I'll kind of explain. But these were both players that we expected, I believe, a lot of this season. Jay Sternberger was that tight end last year, drafted in the third round high, that, you know, unfortunately he was battling injuries, didn't really get on the field, and we just had really high hopes, you know, coming into the season, really didn't come through in reality on the field. Josh Jackson was one of those guys, second round player. We really thought the, you know, Jerry Gray addition would help him along in this defense at that defensive back position. But neither one of these guys were going to be, were on the field. And down the stretch, they were healthy scratches and didn't even, were not active in the playoffs. And that's just when you're looking at a team that's spending these high draft picks and high resources on second and third round players, you expect those guys to be, you know, key contributors in year two and year three, and not to even be able to get on the field when healthy down the stretch in the playoffs just seems like the definition of a disappointment.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought about Josh Jackson. When you break it down with Jay Sternberger, I mean, you're right. Third round draft pick, a lot of draft stock. I think that this will be a big year for him to see what he can do, sort of like what Josh Jackson was we were sort of expecting him to either figure it out or make that jump in 2020, which he did not. But my disappointment, and I struggled, this was probably the category that I struggled with the most, but I ended up going with the Swerve, Tyler Ervin.
Oh,
wow.
For disappointment. And I think that when he was on the field, you could see the reason why we were so excited last year when we brought him on, the reason why Coach LaFleur wanted him to be re-signed and wanted him to be a big focal point of this offense. He had 13 carries, 67 yards, 11 receptions, 84 yards over 8 games in 2020. He also had 10 kicks for 196 yards, 5 punts for 20 yards. But he dealt with a ton of injuries. And you could tell that, like, when he was injured, that the offense was missing a lot of that sort of pre-snap eye candy, how he was able to distract people. I think that had he been healthy, it would have been interesting to see what sort of impact he would have had with this offense. I think also, too, I had really high expectations for Swerve coming in. And so for him to battle all those injuries and only appear in 4 games after week 4, he is my disappointment for the 2020 season.
Wow. Not a name that came to mind when I was thinking of this category, but the way you break it down sure is interesting. And yeah, you're right. I think the offense really did lose something when Ervin wasn't in there. And I know we signed Tavon Austin mid-season to kind of maybe try and be that guy, but that also didn't really work out. So it just kind of further expands upon him not being able to be there in those games.
Yeah, Tavon Austin, talk about disappointment. Yikes.
Poor guy too. Like, I mean, we just brought him on and we were just hoping to see something out of that return game. I think just I had big high expectations for Ervin, and it would have been interesting to see, had he not battled those injuries, what could have happened. Would he have been able to break one? Would he have been able to make a special teams play, the whole shoulda coulda woulda sort of thing? But you can tell that type of gadget player is a focal point for Coach LaFleur, so I'm curious to see what they do with that position moving forward. But we've got 3 categories left of the 2020 version of the UPs, and that is favorite play, favorite game, and favorite memory. And Ken, what is your favorite play of the 2020 Green Bay Packers season?
All right, boys. I'm going to take you back all the way to the first game of the season.
Wow. Ooh. Okay.
If you can remember, we played the Minnesota Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
And our boy, Jaire Alexander, thinks he has a run play called, and he thinks he's got the scouting information, and he was wrong. But he's like, you know what? I'm overcommitted. I'm here. And he goes for it, and he gets the sack safety of Kirk Cousins. I loved it. It was a huge impact play. I remember jumping off the couch. I'm someone who's pretty cool, calm, collected when watching football games now. And, you know, first game of the season and just having that kind of impact play from the defense. I love watching the defense run around and make plays. So for me, that really jumped off. And a fun fact, the defense, you know, him scoring that safety, they scored on defense before this number one scoring offense, which turned out to be the number one scoring offense, scored any points that season. So Crosby hit a field goal and then the safety before Aaron Rodgers connected to, of course, Davante Adams later in the second quarter.
Yeah, great selection. And I love the flashback too. Like it's vivid. I can remember it. And that sack was textbook, and just the celebration afterwards and week one too. No fans.
Anytime a defense can score just makes me really happy.
I love it. Great one. I'm curious, Nebels, what's your favorite play?
I think my favorite play, I was going back and forth between two of them. The first one being the little in the playoff game against the Rams, Davante, when he went in motion, cut back and scored the touchdown from the 1 yard line on third down and one. But I think my favorite one was the Aaron Jones 77 yard touchdown run against the Eagles back in week 13. Now, I watched that a few times today, just kind of going through it, and just how he breaks tackles right off the bat. You think he's run out of bounds, makes the cutback, keeps going, scores a touchdown. I think what was almost equally impressive about that run is you have MVS running with him stride for stride, throwing blocks, and then you had Bakhtiari that was also running stride for stride with him. I mean, I think Bakhtiari got into the end zone before he did, but that was just one of those plays that was just the ultimate individual effort. However, you had, it wouldn't have happened without the efforts of MVS and Bakhtiari. It was just an all-around awesome play, and that's going to stick out in my mind for some time.
I love it. I love how vivid, like, when you and then when Ken described favorite play, like, I immediately can remember exactly what it looked like. So I love those plays. I went with Rodgers to Adams for the 400th touchdown in that same Philadelphia Eagles game.
Nice.
Part of it, when doing research and prep on these categories, that was the first thing that popped in my head for favorite play. And a lot of it was the celebration of Davante Adams, on his knees, arms extended, gold zone, I love gold, and then being able to hand off the football to Aaron Rodgers, his 400th touchdown. That drive, too, being pinned on the 1 yard line.
Mm-hmm.
He needed three touchdowns in that Eagles game. He got three touchdowns. It capped a 99 yard drive that started with a 42 yard bomb to Adams in the back of their own end zone. That whole drive. But Adams and Rodgers' celebration for Rodgers' 400th is just something that just sticks out. It's just so pure. It's so real. It makes me happy. But that was the first thing that came to mind. There were countless other plays that were great, but for some reason, that one stuck with me.
What I love about all these that we came up with is, you had mentioned this before, just as soon as you hear the other person describe it, you can see the broadcast of that happening in real time. And I think I think that's the definition of these favorite plays, right? That they're so iconic and that, they're the highlights. They're the things that everyone's talking about. And that number 400, that's one that I wish I would have thought of. That's a great moment there, Bryce.
Why, thank you. I think this has been a great episode and the first UPs with you, Ken. So I'm thrilled to have all of us here to break down all the UPs. Looking forward to our 2021 version of the UPs, maybe getting a little ahead of myself, but we've got two other categories left. And in terms of favorite memory, I'm going to kick it off. And I had to give another UP to Robert Tonyan, his three touchdown performance in the Atlanta Falcons game. Also, this is the first year that you joined, Ken. And while we connected, while we all connected over the summer and virtual off-season training camp, no preseason, all that stuff. The texting back and forth for that Atlanta Falcons game is something that like really sticks. It really shines for me in terms of just a favorite memory, because we were going back and forth. You were so worried about my physical well-being.
Oh, yeah,
and
I thought your heart probably exploded.
So that, the care, also the camaraderie, it was pretty great. You know, six catches, a team high 98 yards, three touchdowns. He became only the third tight end since 1950 to score three touchdowns in a single game in Packers franchise history. Also, the somersault Yogi for his third touchdown. It was just pretty great to see. I also want to slide in, favorite memory too, was recording with Brandon Bostic as well. Getting a player to come on and talk about mental health, to talk about reinvention, happiness. That definitely sticks out in terms of all of our recording episodes. But for favorite memory, Robert Tonyan and his three touchdown performance Monday Night Football.
Nice, nice. I kind of cheated on this one, as I like to do. I didn't really want to go through and narrow it down just to one, you know, to one particular moment. I think this is going to be, I kind of look at the season as a whole for my favorite memory. This season, it always stick out to me because it was a season where it looked like all the guys were out there just having fun playing football. Rodgers was in a, you know, was like a kid again. The receivers, everybody, the whole, anytime anything good would happen, it was like they were just like a bunch of kids on Christmas morning. They were excited to be out there on the field. They all, everybody looked like they were loving the game, and that's just something that's just gonna stick out to me. I mean, I know you have players, you know, like Favre always loved the game. You could always see he was enjoying it, and there's always been players like that. But this is kind of like the first time that I can remember watching a team at that the whole entire team looks like they were just out there having a blast playing backyard football, and that's something that I'm gonna remember for a long time to come.
Nice.
I love man, that. I agree fully with that. That's not mine, but man, I agree with that. Like, there just seemed to be something different about this season.
Exactly.
And everyone was having fun. And I think that just goes kind of the culture of this team and just trying to make, at the end of the day, you know, these are grown men being paid lots of money to play a child's game. And with all the stress of COVID and lockdowns and will there even be a season, to see just them having a good time and just celebrating the opportunity just to be out there was that was big this season. And I'm glad you had that as your favorite memory.
For sure.
For me, we're gonna go in the way back machine, and you'll get a little bit of a idea of my inner nerdom and like how my brain works. My favorite memory comes on draft night, and I'm gonna hold off a little bit. I remember, you know, draft was in April. And this is when sports leagues were shutting down and the NFL was going forward with the draft and trying to figure out a way of doing it properly and safely. And for a bit, they're like, are we even going to do the draft? So the fact that the draft happened and everything that's involved with that and the draft industrial complex as we know it, you know, being able to go full bore. But then specifically, so you add all that in, kind of the anticipation and the buildup to this draft, to the 2020 draft. And on draft night, texting with both of you gentlemen, I'm three or four old fashions in, and the Green Bay Packers drafted Jordan Love. So when I was watching on streaming service, which is about a minute or two behind live, so I closed down Twitter as soon as I saw they had traded up, and I wanted to be honestly surprised. And let's just say I was very surprised when I saw that name come across. I stood up and yelled, holy shit, they actually did it. There was so much rumor and speculation. Will this be the year that they draft the apparent replacement or heir to the throne, if you will, for Aaron Rodgers? And I was planning on going to bed as soon as the draft was over. But, you know, then here comes me and my salary cap and my nerdery that I had to figure out what the plan was, right? And so then getting a million text messages, DMs about what's going to happen and what about Rodgers? What does this mean? What does this mean? And kind of figuring it all out on draft night and kind of coming to that initial conclusion that I guess the rest of sports media kind of came to in the coming days that 2022 would be that time. Just for me, that whole package of leading up, like, is this draft actually going to happen? And then the moment of like, holy cow, this is crazy what they just did and what they pulled off. And then retreating to my spreadsheets to figure everything out. That whole crazy cycle is something I'll never forget.
Oh, man. What I love about all this
kind
is
of off script from maybe what you were expecting, but
yeah, I was not expecting that at all. And same with Neibel's response too. But that's why I love the U piece, is just that rather than doing sort of a consensus pick, I love hearing everyone's different perspectives on this. And for me, it's like a flashback. I remember texting Neibel. I remember texting you, Ken. And this is before you had joined the Unknown Packers podcast.
Right.
So you were not an official member yet. So we were still in that, I don't know, maybe that I had looked at your profile, if we were talking like online dating sort of thing. Like I was looking at your profile, kind of wondering, and then a month later, I decided to slide in and ask you to join the Unknown Packers podcast. So pretty cool that you break, both of you break those down. I would not have expected that in terms of favorite memory. As we wrap up, the Yuppies on tap, best game of the season. What are your thoughts?
I'll start it off, gentlemen. So
don't you one do of the it, reasons Ken. Don't you
one
do
of the
it.
Reasons why I selected, you know, the whole draft night and the whole picking of Jordan Love is because I kind of hedged it with my best game of the season, which also contains a really fond memory for me. Sunday Night Football, December at Lambeau, cold, snowing, against the big, scary playoff opponent of the Tennessee Titans.
You did it.
And the boogeyman of Derrick Henry coming in, and the Packers just unloaded on him. 40-14 win. Rodgers was in prime form for throwing four touchdowns. Devontae caught three touchdowns. And my boy, A.J. Dillon, got his opportunity. Mentioned earlier by you guys talking about Rookie of the Year, where Jones goes down, Williams was out, and it goes off for 124 yards and two touchdowns. Again, need some work on that Lambeau leap skill. But for me, this game, I remember everyone was so scared about this game coming, you know, at the back end of the season, right? Like, this will be by far the Packers' biggest test before the playoffs. Can they go toe-to-toe with this juggernaut of a team? And they just, you know, it was ended up being 40-14, but I don't think that score is even reflective of how much the Packers were in control of that game.
Yep. I had the same exact thing, Ken. Same exact game. Yeah, you know, pretty much for the same reasons. I mean, the Tennessee game early in the season, I had earmarked as an L on the schedule. And even approaching it, I'm like, this is going to be the closest thing to a playoff game that we have. It was like a dress rehearsal. And after how they completely dismantled the Titans at night, that's when I thought, I'm like, hey, this team's going to win the Super Bowl. I mean, they steamrolled them. I thought no one was going to be able to stop them going forward. You know, how they shut down Henry. I thought, you know, the defense was going to be able to beat the world. And obviously we know how that turned out. But that, you know, for that night, I thought we could beat anybody. And it was a phenomenal feeling. That was just a fun game to watch. And just got me pumped up for the rest of the season.
I thought about, and I probably should have gone for best game of the season, week 16. In terms of like performance-wise, I mean, you guys hit it out of the ballpark in terms of what that all entailed. I keep gravitating towards the week 4 Monday Night Football game against the Atlanta Falcons. 30-16 win. I know this is probably a surprise, but Robert Tonyan, to see him break out the way that he did, we went into the bye 4-0, and that was that moment where I thought, you know what, this COVID type of season, I think, not to say that it didn't unfaze the Packers, they just looked like they were clicking. And I felt like going into the bye to Monday Night Football, prime time, also the camaraderie of all three of us, and like I mentioned with the Sycamore, but that was the moment, like Neibel's had mentioned about, I thought that we were going to go all the way. That was the moment where I'm like, this is a Super Bowl championship caliber team.
Wow.
And they were a little rusty out of the gate after the bye, and I still firmly believe that the only team that can beat the Green Bay Packers in 2020 was the Green Bay Packers. But there you have it for the Yuppies on tap. Final thoughts, ruminations of how the 2020 version of the Yuppies went.
I loved it. I love doing this. This is my first time. I love that, you know, we had some differences of perspective and differences of opinion. You know, some of those top awards, I think, you know, we mentioned at the top of the hour that those are going to kind of probably be pretty similar, but I just love the way, you know, we each kind of looked at it differently. But I'm excited to get out of this tuxedo I've put on for this fancy award night and into some comfy sweats and head into bed.
And I've been told that Rashawn Gary is still beside himself and in shock for getting a UP. So
that's right.
I wanted to mention that as we wrap up. Neebles.
Yeah, definitely fun. I'm glad we got to do it again this year, and I'm looking forward to doing it again next year. Like Ken said, I enjoyed the variety, everybody's differing opinions, and I can't say that any of your guys' selections were wrong. They made perfect sense, and it's just great how we all have that different perspective of things. So again, I look forward to doing this again next season and many seasons beyond.
Well, there you have it, Packer fans, the 2020 edition of the Yuppies. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Bryce Christensen.
I'm Neebles.
And I'm Ken Ingles.
And this is the Unknown Packers Podcast. Thank you so much for following the Unknown Packers Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Unknown Packers, as well as Facebook, Instagram, the Unknown Packers Podcast. You can check us out on our website, theunknownpackers.com, and a variety of different podcast platforms as well. You can also say, hey, Alexa, play the Unknown Packers Podcast. That's right. We're friends with Alexa. Go Pack, go.
This podcast was edited and produced by Sonic Transformation. Sonic Transformation, your sound refined.